Blog Talk Radio.
This episode of HR Happy Hour is sponsored by Acquire. Things that seem more appealing than dealing with workforce analytics? Spending hours in line at the DMV. Trying on swimsuits under fluorescent lights. Vacationing with your in-laws. Jury duty. That all changes when you use Acquire Insight. Find out how. Request a demo at acquireinc.com/entrepreneur.
All right, hey, HR Happy Hour. This is Steve Bodes, of course. I was telling Fran before the show started. Fran, if you can hear me, I hope you can.
Yes, I can.
I was working on a new switchboard on the Blog Talk Radio service tonight, and I wasn't sure what was going to happen. And right off the bat, right, the intro music didn't want to play. So lesson learned on the new switchboard. But, hey, we made it through. We've got the show started. I can hear you, Fran. You can hear me, I think, right?
Yes, exactly.
All right, so we're talking about, this is the HR Happy Hour. This is Thursday, June 23rd. Oh, here we go, right. That was only slightly delayed, Fran. What was that, about a 40-second delay when the music came on? So lesson learned on the new switchboard. I'm glad we learned that tonight. So, again, Steve Bose here with you on the HR Happy Hour. It is Thursday, June 23rd, 2011. I'm with, of course, Fran Melmed, who's sitting in tonight in sort of the co-host chair. Fran, welcome back to the show. You've been on the show as a guest before, but now you're sort of riding shotgun with me, and so we're glad to have you. So welcome, Fran. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing well. I feel like I have big shoes to fill.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, it's been an interesting few weeks since we started this sort of rotating co-host kind of thing. And Dawn Herdlicka-Burke was with us for a couple of weeks. Fran's here tonight. There'll be some other folks coming through as well. So, you know, I like the vibe we're getting from having some different voices on the show as well. So we're really super happy for Fran to be with us tonight. And it's a great topic for Fran to be on as well, as we're talking about wellness and taking wellness social is the subject tonight. So, again, my name's Steve Bose. This is HR Happy Hour, episode 106. Fran Melmed is along for the ride. And just a couple of quick announcements. Call-in number tonight, 646-378-1086, 646-378-1086. If you do call in, please press 1 if you want to come on board tonight. I will try to figure out the new switchboard and understand which callers want to come on board and which ones don't. So I do apologize in advance if I open up anyone's line tonight who wasn't really prepared to come on the show. Again, we're working with some new tools here tonight, and I haven't quite mastered them yet. So, but anyway, that's the call-in number. On Twitter, our hashtag HRHappyHour. HR Happy Hour is the hashtag. And, of course, the show is on Twitter, too. Our show Twitter handle is at HR Happy Hour. Fran is at FEMELMED as well. And our guest, who we're going to welcome in just one second, is hanging out patiently for us with us tonight. We'll give you his Twitter handle as well, and you can chat with him before, during, after the show, too. So a couple of quick announcements, I'll probably make these again at the end of the show. SHRM next week, of course, the big HR conference will be there. The HR Happy Hour will be there doing some work with the good folks at Dice.com. We'll be hanging out at booth 2616 next week. I'll be there along at different times with Lori Rudiman and China Gorman. So if you're out at SHRM and you want to say hi and talk HR, talk HR Happy Hour, or just hang out with us, win an iPad, enjoy Happy Hour itself, please come by and see me. Again, that's the Dice booth, 2616 out at SHRM. And also at SHRM next week, I'll be working with the great group of folks at TLNT.com to launch the first TLNT radio show live from SHRM. That's going to be June 28th, a Tuesday. That'll be live on site from the SHRM Social Media Lounge, 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time. So you can look for that next Tuesday. We've got a great lineup of guests, and we're going to have a really good time doing the show next week from SHRM, the TLNT show. So that's it for announcements. Fran, anything you want to mention off the bat before we get going, before we bring in our guests for the night?
No. I'm bummed I won't be at SHRM to meet up with you and to win an iPad because I want one.
I'm going to tell you what, there's iPads galore, right? It's going to be a disappointment for folks who don't win one of the iPads. I think that's sort of the price of admission, I think, now at the big conferences, right? The iPad?
Yeah, well, they're slick, but I just did my husband's.
Oh, good. Clever. So let's get on with the show. Tonight's show is called Taking Wellness Social, and we have a great guest we want to welcome to the show. Our guest tonight is Rajiv Kumar, MD, Dr. I don't know. We'll have to figure out how to call him. Is it Dr. Rajiv, Dr. Kumar, just Rajiv? I kind of like the way Dr. Rajiv sounds a little bit, but we'll see how he likes to be called. But Rajiv is one of the co-founder and the chief medical officer of ShapeUp. Now, ShapeUp is a social wellness company. I'll let Rajiv explain it a little bit better than I can, but I'll just bring him right on board right now. Rajiv Kumar, welcome to the HR Happy Hour.
Good evening. Thanks, Steve. So glad to be here.
Rajiv, can you tell us a little bit about ShapeUp? Tell us a little bit about yourself, certainly, your background, and tell us about ShapeUp and what you've been doing at ShapeUp for the last few years.
Sure. So ShapeUp is an organization that I founded when I was a first-year medical student. And I became very interested in prevention, and I became very frustrated with the fact that our healthcare system is focused on treating disease after it happens instead of preventing it in the first place. And so as I sat in my medical school lectures, I realized that we were learning only how to treat disease and not how to prevent our patients from getting disease in the first place. This was back in 2005 when we all started to wake up to the national obesity epidemic, and you'd turn on the TV, Steve, and you'd see, you know,
sure,
Governor Mike Huckabee or President Bill Clinton talking about childhood obesity, adult obesity, and how we were on the wrong track as a nation. And I got very interested. I was taken aback by the statistics that two-thirds of all of us are overweight or obese, and 85% of us don't exercise on a regular basis. And I was thinking about all the patients that I was seeing in the clinic with diabetes and heart disease and certain forms of cancer, and thinking about what an amazing human toll we could prevent and an economic toll we could prevent if we started to get people focusing on healthy living. And so that was really the spark that got me interested in this. And what I realized when I started to see patients is that while most of our patients were struggling to lead a healthy lifestyle, a few of them were successful at changing their behavior. There were few and far between, unfortunately, but the people who were able to lose weight and quit smoking and increase their exercise often had one thing in common. And that commonality was that they had successfully leveraged their trusted social network to help them succeed. And what I mean by that is they had worked together with their friends, their family, and their colleagues to create a support network and accountability to achieve their goals. So instead of doing things like going on a diet in private and not telling anybody or joining a gym alone, they found an exercise partner, or they announced to their family what their weight loss goal was, and they had that support that helped keep them engaged over a long period of time. So thinking about that model, I got very interested in it. We created a local nonprofit organization here in Rhode Island called ShapeUp Rhode Island, and we eventually got a lot of traction with employers, and we launched ShapeUp the following year. We've since been working directly with large employers and health plans all across the country, and we essentially help them take their population and apply a social approach to health and wellness to drive engagement and to drive outcomes. And so I actually left medical school for a few years to build this company. I finally went back, much to my mother's satisfaction.
Yeah, me too. I've been touting you as Dr. Kumar here. I'm going to get myself in trouble.
I went back.
No, he's official.
My mother can now sleep at night, which is great. I just graduated actually this past May with my business partner, now Dr. Brad Weinberg. And he and I are both now back at the company full-time working and trying to help grow this approach and really show people that there's a social opportunity here to transform healthcare. And so we decided, instead of seeing patients one at a time, that we were going to dedicate our careers to prevention and wellness and population health. So that's why I'm here, and that's why I'm working with ShapeUp.
Great. Rajiv, thanks for that. Let me do a quick reset. We're on the HR Happy Hour. My name's Steve Bose. Fran Melmed's with us tonight as well. Our guest is Dr. Rajiv Kumar from ShapeUp, the founder, co-founder of ShapeUp, and chief medical officer of ShapeUp, an official doctor, we've learned, which is good. We're going to talk about wellness in a social context and some of the things that ShapeUp does, but as well, some of the broader implications that these kind of social approaches have, Rajiv. You know, it struck me as kind of interesting, Rajiv, as you were telling us a little bit about your experience with many of the patients that you were seeing back in 2005 and so forth, and the ones that were successful and that had that sort of social component. Because me, thinking about it from the outside in, I kind of see, I guess I never really thought about it that way. I see I see the social, like the unhealthy behaviors being the really inherently social ones, if that makes sense. Like, you know, going to the ballpark and eating badly and kind of, I don't know, staying up too late or carousing or you know, those kind of those social smoking, right? Not that I'm a smoker, or really was, but, you know, people do that and tend to congregate and do those kinds of things. But really, it's interesting how you've seen in your experience and what you're doing with Shape Up that those same kind of social, I don't know if it's pressure is the right word, but those social signals work in those healthier contexts as well. It's quite interesting.
Well, there's an important clarification, I guess, and that was that, you know, the people who were succeeding were few and far between. And the difference is that, you know, when left to our own devices, we spread unhealthy behaviors, you know, as a baseline. So if you think about over the past 30 years how obesity has spread through social networks, and, you know, Dr. Nicholas Christakis from Harvard has done a whole host of studies on the Framingham Heart Study showing that, you know, people who gain weight influence their friends and their family and their colleagues to gain weight as well. But when you're intentionally or purposefully trying to change your behavior, then you can actually spread healthy behaviors. So when people are quitting smoking and making a commitment to do that, they lead by example and the people around them quit smoking. So Dr. Christakis also showed that when people quit smoking, they quit smoking in droves and in pockets. It's not isolated
right.
individuals quitting. It was actually large groups of people quitting together because they were influencing each other. And so when you set a goal and you announce it to your friends, I'm trying to achieve X or I'm trying to do Y, you've then purposefully modified your social network so that they can support you and they can be aware of what you're trying to do and they can make sure that their actions or their behaviors or the words they use are helping you to achieve your goal. So I think it's about being purposeful and intentionally designing the approach so that we can leverage our peers to help us succeed.
Steve, can I jump in with a question?
Rand, please do.
Okay, so I'm curious because, Rajiv, you started you know, with public health in terms of Shape Up Rhode Island, and then you switched tack and are now really focusing on the workforce as a way to improve public health. And I'd just like to hear a little bit more about how you made that decision.
That's a great question. When we first designed this intervention, it was designed to go directly to the community. It was about people signing up with their family members and their neighbors, and we launched it directly to all of our friends and the whole universe of people that we knew here in Rhode Island. And what was fascinating was that employers started to call us as they heard about this program, and they said, can we sponsor our employees to be a part of it? And, you know, I'm ashamed to say that as a first-year medical student, I didn't quite understand the whole financing of healthcare or the care-based healthcare system. And so,
it's one of the drawbacks of our healthcare, of our medical training, right?
Exactly. There's no class about how insurance works. I say, honest to God.
Yeah. I think they talk about that at least at one point. No, but yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's all, you know, you learn how to treat a diabetic patient and what medications to
right.
prescribe and how to manage their insulin. You don't learn about how their health care is being paid for. So, you know, I learned about the idea of self-insurance and how all of these employers were at risk for the claims that their employees were making, and they had a financial incentive, not just because it was the right thing to do, which I hope is driving their decisions as well, but because they have a bottom line they're trying to maintain. So these companies came to us, and they were demanding a solution like this. And that was, so that was one area, was we found the payer. Instead of having individuals having to fork money over out of their own pocket, which they're so constantly asked to do when they join gyms and participate in weight loss programs, and, you know, people are always asking individuals for money to be healthy. This was an opportunity for us to get the intervention to the individual and have a different stakeholder pay. So here we had the employer paying and the employee coming for free. That was kind of the first insight. The second, and we got much higher participation that way when there was no cost barrier.
Right, that idea of removing some of the barriers for people.
Exactly.
Change is so hard as it is.
Oh, I mean, there's so many barriers to behavior change, you know, in our minds and in our own lives that, you know, when cost becomes a factor, it's, you know, forget about it. So the second insight was that in the workplace, social behavior spread more naturally and more quickly because we spend so much time at work and there's so many people in a confined physical space, and the things we do influence each other, and we lead by example and we follow our peers. And so, you know, you'll see things like workplaces spreading unhealthy behaviors where we start to dump our leftovers, you know, every morning at the office. And we do muffin
right.
Mondays and bagel Tuesdays and donut Fridays. And, you know, we take the elevator to the second floor and we just follow everybody else. And there's a staircase right next to it and we don't even think about taking the stairs. And we fight for the first parking space when we come to work, you know. So the workplace became an ideal place to have a health intervention and to try to spread healthy behaviors. And people were influenced, and we got critical masses of people within a confined population, and that helped us to keep a program exciting and engaging over time. So we found that both the workplace was a great social network where we could intervene, and we also found that the employer was willing to pay, which allowed us to get dramatically higher participation and find a delivery model for this type of intervention.
Rajiv, let me do a pause for a second, and Fran, do a quick reset on the show. This is the HR Happy Hour. I'm Steve Bose. I'm joined by Fran Melmed, and our guest tonight is Rajiv Kumar, Chief Medical Officer and co-founder of Shape Up, which is a wellness, sort of a social wellness solution provider and organization that works with corporations on wellness programs and really more specifically social wellness programs that we're talking about tonight. Our call-in number, 646-378-1086. Please do feel free to call in if you want to get on board tonight and ask a question of Rajiv or Fran, and or make a comment or just hang out with us. That's great. On Twitter, our hashtag HR Happy Hour, and we're keeping an eye on that. We've tweeted out everybody's Twitter handles, Fran's and Rajiv's as well, so you can participate along that way as well. So, Rajiv, you've been talking a little bit in the last couple of minutes about the the morphing of Shape Up and sort of your efforts from sort of the public facing kind of community-based efforts to more corporate efforts driven around payer and motivation and things like that. When you talk with corporations today, corporations that you work with or potential corporations, what do you find, if there are any, what would be the barriers that you might find in organizations to embracing wellness programs, and maybe more in general, and then more specifically to these kinds of socially driven wellness programs? Do you have any difficulty sort of convincing organizations that this is a good idea?
Well, when we first started the company, we set out to try to proselytize and convince companies that they should be focused on wellness, and that turned out to be a pretty losing strategy. The companies who by now are not focused on wellness and haven't understood intuitively the benefits of helping to improve the health of their population are probably going to be the laggards and very difficult to change. And we heard things like, you know, why would I invest in the health of my employees when they might leave next year and go to my competitor, and the right. benefits are going to be over the next 2 to 3 years, and my competitor is going to gain the benefit that I'm investing in my employees for their health and wellness. And obviously that's short-sighted, and, you know, even though there is churn and people leave, you're going to get your competitor's employees as well. So there's this, tragedy of the commons concept. But we also, we heard from employers that, you know, they weren't convinced that this was actually going to reduce their healthcare costs. They've tried a lot of things in the past. Nothing seemed to be working, and they were frustrated, and they weren't willing to invest more money in wellness. So those are companies, you know, I think that will eventually come around when they see that they really have no other options. But we decided to focus instead on the companies that had already bought into wellness, that were running wellness programs but running into problems with their wellness program. And that's where we found most of our success. So the companies that had leadership support, that had mobilized funding, that had a budget for it, that had a wellness manager, a wellness director, and had already started to get some experience under their belt, that's where we really found our wings and got a lot of traction in helping them to achieve the goals that were kind of slipping by them and the things that they wanted to do with their wellness program.
Right, and Fran, maybe you can comment on this as well, because I know you work with organizations in and around trying to get more, really to derive more success from
sure.
programs that they have in place. But maybe Rajiv and Fran can both comment. Rajiv, you mentioned that, you know, you're having more success with organizations that are really bought into wellness, but for whatever reason are having trouble getting the programs to really sort of show the kind of results that they need. What might be one or two or three of sort of the common problems that organizations have in more traditional / less social, if you will, wellness-type programs? And Fran, as well, if you have any thoughts on this. Where does it sort of go wrong, even for companies that have bought into it, at least conceptually?
Well, I think
why don't you go first, and I'll jump in after.
Okay. We've really seen one of the biggest pain points is around engagement, and engagement is directly related to return on investment for their wellness program. But companies went out of the gate and started to spend a lot of money on programs like telephonic coaching and building on-site facilities and just putting pretty large investments into their wellness program. And when they found that employees weren't participating, utilizing the programs they had put into place, and they calculated what they were actually spending per participant, they were certainly not achieving a return on investment for their money spent. So when you're spending, you know, thousands of dollars per participant in a coaching program, you know, there's no research to show that you can actually reduce someone's healthcare costs by thousands of dollars. There's research you can reduce it by hundreds of dollars. And so I think a big frustration for a lot of the companies that we talk to is they're not getting the engagement they need to actually have a return on investment and justify the money they're spending on their wellness program. Also, you know, if you have a company with a whole wellness department and they're charged with improving the health of the population and they can't get anybody actually engaged in the health interventions, they're simply not achieving their goal, and it makes it difficult for them to keep going on. So that's where we see most of the frustration. There are a lot of great interventions out there, and when people use them, they can help improve their health, but people don't use them. And we can talk a little bit about all the different reasons why.
Okay.
But engagement was really the frustration that we're seeing.
I would echo that. I mean, if you look at any of the studies that have come out recently about healthcare, whether that's Aon Hewitt just recently released their 2011 healthcare benefit survey, or any other one, they always cite engagement as their number one obstacle to being able to achieve their health goals. And with their health goals, they're generally talking about reduced healthcare costs. You know, you usually see them talking about productivity or lowered absenteeism or even engagement, though there are studies that suggest that wellness can achieve all those things, higher results in all those areas. So engagement is, like, the major, I think, the major obstacle. And then I think one of the things that, in terms of social solutions, what happens is a couple things. One is that it goes viral in many ways because it becomes decentralized and employee-owned in many ways. It may be a solution that's offered by the company, but the employees start to own it and take it and run with it because, you know, I'm familiar with Shape Up. A client of mine uses it, and I wrote about actually kind of tagging along with them this year on their 10-week challenge. And one of the things that I know from them and talking with Rajiv and others about it is that with this or other social solutions, what you have are people working in teams, they're working together, there's competition, so there's all these additional elements that come into play, particularly with Shape Up, that bust the engagement woes because the employees start owning it and driving it, and they're doing it because it's fun, and they're doing it because it's simple, and they're doing it because it becomes integrated in their day and not just an add-on. And it becomes part of, it's almost like the water cooler conversation in some ways.
Right. I think the only add to that, you know, another kind of concern that a lot of companies have around wellness programs is their ability to measure outcomes. So unless they're actually diving into the claims, their ability to find out if an employee is going to the fitness center, for example, what impact is that having on their health? Or if an employee is participating in various on-site programs or doing Weight Watchers or whatever it might be, how does the employer actually collect the data, measure the outcomes, validate it, and know that what they're spending money on and the programs they're offering are actually having an impact on their population? So I think, and we'll talk about how a social platform that engages people and gets them to set goals and track their progress facilitates the collection and analysis of that type of data.
Right, Rajiv, that's a great transition, a great segue, because Fran, Rajiv and Fran, you both sort of talked about engagement, at least in your estimation, engagement as being a primary barrier, a primary obstacle to organizations that maybe have explored wellness programs or have put wellness programs into place but just haven't seen the kind of results they want. So I'd love to talk, Rajiv, specifically then, as we morph into the second part of the show, really, which is how the social approach or the social components that either you guys have built at Shape Up or other companies as well, because as Fran suggested, there are several companies doing similar kinds of things, and so that, I guess that's a good sign, right? Once you get four or five competitors doing similar things, you're onto a good idea. But I'd love for you to talk a little bit about how the social approach specifically helps cross the engagement barrier and helps produce the kinds of results that organizations are looking for.
Sure. Well, you know, let's start from the very basic. We know that people are motivated by their peers, right? All of us, you know, whether we admit it or not, care about what other people think about us. We are influenced by what our friends and our family say and they do. And there's just a great deal of research showing that the peer influence that people have on us affects our health. So we talked about Dr. Nicholas Christakis' work and showing that people who quit smoking affect our health, and when people gain weight or lose weight, that affects our health. But even beyond health, you know, we can think about other examples of how the people around us influence us. You know, one of my favorite studies was about recycling, and when people put their recycling bin on the curb outside their house once a week, and what motivates them to do that. And there was a study done, and they were trying to ascertain the reasons people put that recycling bin out, and it turned out the number one reason that people put that recycling bin on the curb is because they don't want to be the one house on the street that is not recycling. So it's less about that they actually care about the environment, although they do in some part, but they really didn't want to have that social stigma of not participating and not being one who's doing what everybody else is doing. So I think that really hits home on the idea that the people around us have an influence on us, and we want to be like them. We want to look good in their eyes, and we can leverage that to push people through a behavior change. So people are motivated by their peers, and health
right.
is social. So in order to have a successful intervention, we have to think about the people around us and how they influence each other. And so a social approach helps to accomplish that. There's obviously a lot of research showing that when we work together, we're much more likely to succeed at reaching a goal. And fundamentally, every company believes that, right? That's why we work on teams, and you know, every company has teamwork as part of its, you know, corporate goals or, you know, corporate mission or whatever it might be. But if we think about interventions like Weight Watchers or Alcoholics Anonymous, these are all team-based, group-based behavior change programs, and the reason they're successful is because they bring people together and they leverage the power of a group, which is motivation, accountability, support when things get difficult or frustrating. That's another piece of the social component that drives behavior change. And I think there's a couple other reasons why it's important. One is it dramatically reduces the cost necessary to have a successful wellness program. So we talked about low engagement and how that's one of the biggest frustrations, if not the single greatest frustration in wellness. And so most companies have turned to paying their employees to do things. So if I can't get them to lose weight, I'm going to pay them to lose weight. And you know, that's sort of akin to, you know, paying your child to get an A on his or her report card. It might work in the short term, but in the long term, it starts to get very expensive when they want more money every time. And it's not teaching people the fundamentals of why they should want to do well for themselves in the first place. So when you use social incentives, you can make a wellness program fun, and you can give people other reasons to participate and to engage rather than just getting a financial reward for doing so. There are lots of social rewards that we get when we work together with our friends and family. And that helps keep people engaged over a long period of time, just like on Facebook or LinkedIn, where you get a message once in a while pulling you back in because somebody asks you a question or sends you a comment or tags you in a photo or asks you to connect with them, and you keep engaging. The social approach has the power to do that for health and wellness. You know, I just saw the statistic today that Facebook has 750 million active monthly
right.
users, not just registered users, but 750 million people coming back every single month. And the reason they're coming back is because their social network is pulling them back in. So that's really why I think a social approach to health and wellness is, you know, the real answer to driving the type of engagement and behavior change that we want to see.
Fran, I'd love for you to comment on that as well, especially as someone who's sort of, at least from your series of posts you were on your site that I followed really closely, with your participation in this kind of a program, even if you were sort of only had one foot in the program, as you say, because it was with one of your clients.
Right.
I'd love for you to talk a little bit about those specific social components and as you worked with the platform and the program and what they meant to you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, what I think is interesting about the research that he's showing is that Rajiv was talking about in terms of the way our social networks influence our behavior. Some of the statistics that I've seen, we're almost more likely to be influenced by friends than we are by our spouses. And if you think about work, we're more surrounded by our friends than our spouses.
Friends are more influential than spouses.
I was trying to pull up the statistic that I had, but it's too much to do at one time. But
okay, no worries.
So interesting. But at any rate, when I was following along and writing about my experience with my clients' 10-week shape-up challenge and talking with them as well, what I consistently heard and witnessed is that allegiance. You have an allegiance to people because you do have there are a couple of things that Rajiv talked about, and some is influence, some is kind of shame, some is responsibility and accountability. And these different combinations of emotions kind of colliding and affecting how we stayed with the challenge. Because if you,
right.
you think about behavior change, it's very hard to sustain. And a lot of these things are set up to help somebody adopt a new behavior by systematically doing it over time, repeatedly, until it becomes not something that we think about, but becomes an ingrained habit. And, you know, BJ Fogg from the Stanford Persuasion Lab talks a lot about this in terms of how we insert a new habit by making it part of our daily routine, by connecting mm-hmm. it to something that we already do, and so on. And if you think about this type of at-work challenge where you're checking in with people and you are sharing whether you're moving and so forth, has a lot of those components built in, because you are making it a part of a daily routine. It is
right.
part of work. You are kind of tying it to those existing habits. And so what I found interesting for myself, even though I was a remote worker, which I think has its own complications, and you know, Rajiv can maybe talk to that if that seems like a good course to find. As a remote worker, you don't inherently have all of that except for through virtual connections. But what I found through wearing the pedometer was I felt that was with me all the time. The pressure was with me all the time. And I actually continued to wear it and still do, because it became an ingrained habit to just slip it on. And, I, you
sure.
know, what we're trying
yeah.
to do with these different approaches is to help people adopt healthier habits without necessarily some of these sweeteners, if you will, or more companies are moving to something less, more penalty-based. But to do things that will help.
Well, sure, right. One of the
ingrained.
Last things I did, one of the last things I did sort of setting up some benefit stuff for a company was make sure that the people who admitted that they were smokers were going to pay more for their health care. You know, and it just seems so, I mean, I'm not saying it was wrong or right, I'm not really sure, but it was very punitive, right? That's how it just felt, right?
And that is probably, we're going to see a lot more companies going in that way, whether it's premiums being affected by it, higher premiums, it's surcharges, or other types of penalties. We'll definitely be seeing more of that.
Brian, I want to stop you there, and I want to pause, and Rajiv as well. We'll do a quick reset, and then I want to talk to Rajiv about some of the specifics about, you know, shape up, sure, but just in general, some of the real, we talked in general about social being a really important aspect to drive engagement and to get people enthused and sustain interest, but I do want to talk about some of the specifics about how the platforms and programs actually work and what are some of the things that companies do when they engage with these types of programs. But I just wanted to give out the call-in number again. This is the HR Happy Hour. I'm Steve Bowes. Fran Melmed is with me tonight. Our guest is Rajiv Kumar from ShapeUp, co-founder of ShapeUp, chief medical officer. Made his mother very proud by completing his medical degree. We learned tonight, so we're proud of him as well. I think possibly our first medical doctor in the history of the HR Happy Hour, I believe. And so we're happy to have him with us. Our call-in number is 646-378-1086. Please do feel free to call in tonight and get on board. If you're hanging out on the line and on hold, just press 1 if you want to come on board, and I will get you on board before the show's over. On Twitter, HR Happy Hour is our hashtag, and we're keeping an eye on that. And thanks to the folks who are listening out there and tweeting along with us tonight as well. So, Rajiv, I'd love for you to talk a little bit more specifically now. If we're sort of buying wellness as conceptually, and organizations really do know that, you know, with all the statistics, all the costs going up, that wellness is an important component in their strategy and their mix to try to basically serve their employees and as well serve their shareholders. And we've talked about social in general as being an important factor to cross the engagement barrier. I'd love for you to talk about some of the specifics or some of the foundational elements of the social programs that you guys have built at ShapeUp and how they actually work.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So
There are actually several core mechanisms that we employ through our platform that any social wellness intervention needs to kind of take advantage of in order to engage people. The first is really around just creating connections, right? And this is the obvious, you know, aspect of any social intervention, but letting people connect with people they know and with people they trust, as well as with people they have common interests with. So if I'm trying to lose weight or if I'm trying to quit smoking, allowing me to connect with other colleagues who also share those similar goals allows me to find people who are going to go through a similar experience, and we can share our results along the way, and we can share tips and motivation and hold each other accountable because we have something in common. So allowing people to connect around those commonalities is kind of the core function. So when people come onto our platform, for example, we ask them to identify who their supporters will be, and we ask them to invite people to be on their team. And that's part of helping to build a social graph, the people who I'm influenced by, the people who I share health interests and goals with. That's going to be my workplace-based health social graph as opposed to my Facebook-based social graph, which is around people I want to share photos with and talk about how my day was. These are the people that I want to have motivate me to walk during lunch, or if they see me drinking Diet Coke and know that I'm trying to cut back and drink water, you know, they can kind of hound me when they see me doing that and remind me about my goal. So it's about helping to build that social graph of influence. And then what we do is we take that social graph and we get those people to participate in games and competitions and challenges. So we create these interventions that are game-like, and they use game mechanics like teams and rounds and points and levels and prizes. You'll hear a lot about gaming, you know, on the internet and on mobile apps. We take those gaming mechanics and we apply them to health and wellness and help people to walk more steps, for example, or eat 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, or try to lose a specific amount of weight over a certain period of time. And because those games are not one-to-one, they're social, where you have a team, you can see how your team is doing, you can compare your team with all the other teams, that that drives engagement over the long term. And then there are a few other core elements. One is around public expression, so allowing people to talk about themselves. We all love to talk about who we are and what we're interested in, what we're trying to do, and what our struggles are, and what our successes are. People do that on Facebook, for example, through their profile. We allow people to do that on our platform around health and wellness. And so that public expression becomes very motivating for people, and others like to see how their colleagues are expressing themselves. We use group conversations, which is related to that, which is allowing people to ask questions and share tips and advice with others. And the key there is it generates user-created content. So a wellness program manager can't possibly create enough content or buy enough content that's going to be relevant and dynamic and to each individual employee, but the employees themselves can generate content and share advice, share what's worked and hasn't, and share links that they found to be really useful and resources, and that generates a wealth of information that's sitting in the employee's social network already that we help bring to the surface and allow them to share on a platform. So those are a few of the elements. You know, status and comparison are other powerful elements, allowing people to compare their results with others, giving them things like titles or badges, you know, kind of like, you know, Girl Scout badges or the belts you earn in karate. Those are very motivational mechanics that make people want to achieve more. And then another interesting thing we do is we can tie financial incentives to social actions or social behaviors. So if you're someone who became a team captain, for example, and invited more people to the platform, you might get a special reward or prize that just a general member of the platform didn't get. Or if your whole team completes a specific program and you have 100% adherence, your whole team will win a prize. If one person doesn't do it, then the whole team loses out. And so there's this peer pressure for everybody to succeed. So those are some of the mechanics that we're talking about, social and gaming mechanics that are used to drive engagement and drive outcomes. So it's not just about creating a social network and letting it be a free-for-all. It actually is very intentionally designed to take advantage of the social interactions and the social interplay between colleagues.
Rajiv, how much or little do say, wellness team members or administrators sort of get involved in these conversations? You talked about, you know, public expressions and group conversations and sort of people making these connections and forging the connections. Is it the kind of platform or the kind of solution that tends to largely sort of self-administer and self-guide, or how much interventions tend to happen on behalf of sort of, you know, the wellness sort of authorities inside an organization?
Well, you know, what's interesting about HR people is often their job is to manage risk. And so often the people who work in HR are risk averse. And this is the first time they're letting their employees take control of a program, and they're saying, you know, you populate the content, you generate the excitement and the engagement, and I'll watch and see how it works. And I think maybe that's uncomfortable for some of them early on, but when they realize that their employees really take this up and they start to generate the content and the engagement in the program, they're gratified by what they see. I mean, maybe Fran can speak to any of the messages that her team sent to her during the challenge, or what the conversation was like around who was doing what and how well people were doing, or if the team was slipping in the rankings. A lot of that peer messaging and customized communication that's happening, it's all being driven from the bottom up in a grassroots fashion.
Right. So the point is, I don't really need to know everything that's happening. I don't really need to monitor every conversation that's happening, right, as a central administrator. It's okay for me to let go of that mindset of, I've got to be on top of every communication. Is that friend?
Yeah. Whether it's online or offline, your employees are already talking. They're having the same conversations over the water, in the water cooler and in the bathroom and when they're walking down the hall. So, there are all kinds of things that are being said, that you don't know about and you don't need to know about. And, as long as people are working together on a platform that's designed to achieve a specific objective, not designed to be just a place where people chat, but designed to help them achieve their goals, then it's fine to let people take over and let them run with it.
Fran, I know in your series, I'm going to call you out, Fran. I hope I don't embarrass you. I know in your series of posts, I remember reading one that said, oh, boy, you set a really high goal for yourself and you didn't quite make it, right? Did your teammates call you out on something like that? Or
no, they called me out when I dropped my pedometer in the toilet twice. So.
Oh, no.
But, no. Everybody was very supportive and was just encouraging me to keep on and so forth. And so, no, I think, I think that there are places to have communication around that in terms of how do you set proper goals for yourself, which can be specific to this challenge or anything else where, part of what I think we don't appreciate enough is how much people really don't know about their health. They really don't know always how to do the right thing. I was reading an interesting article today that I shared earlier on Twitter, and it was about it was from LA Times, and it was about restaurants out there starting to change their menus at different restaurants, fast food and other, in advance of the calorie labeling legislation. And they're doing it because they're concerned about losing customers, even though some research has said that customers don't leave because they don't really care, it doesn't change their behavior when they see these calories. And we're doing that as an education element, but it's not having the intended effect. But the point or my aha moment in that is that we need to keep on pushing on several different points to help people make change. And so educating them is one, but what happened, and so educating somebody about how to set goals is one, right? And in terms of support communications with Shape Up, what you were talking about is how much does the HR need to have their hands on. Another is just learning that you will learn as you go along. And so, my client or other clients will see, do we need more support in terms of having on the ground individuals out there helping navigate or being there to stand in if somebody needs help logging into the system or motivation is flagging. So there's things like that where I believe that is HR's place, is to do analysis and then to troubleshoot based on that. But their role is also to let that groundswell begin, because that groundswell can be really powerful and lead to things that will go beyond Shape Up and will become more of what is called that quote-unquote culture of health, where it just becomes part of what we do here.
Right. Fran and Rajiv, let me pause. We've got about 15 or 16 minutes left to go in the show. This is the HR Happy Hour. I'm Steve Bose. Fran Melman is with me tonight. Fran, thank you so much for being here as well. You're getting a lot of love on the back channel, which is great. I love hearing your voice.
Not even on.
You've got a lot of fans out there, which is great. See, I'm just trying to get some reflected good vibes to me by having you tonight. So I think it's working. And our guest is Rajiv Kumar, co-founder and chief medical officer of Shape Up. And Rajiv, I'd love to pitch this one to you. One more question before we sort of move on to a bit more speculative content, which is you talked about measurement and results. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about how organizations can really measure success and impact of these types of socially driven and socially designed wellness programs. How do you advise people to do it? Maybe how your solution helps them to do that? Or what are some of the things that the companies you work with are doing to really get a really good handle on how these programs are really achieving results in the workplace?
One of the nice things about an engaging program that is bringing together a large percentage of your population is that it can get them to actually submit their results. So, you know, one of the things we as human beings hate to do is to track what we're doing. We're no good at tracking. When people start to, you know, track things on paper, they give up pretty quickly. People try to keep exercise logs or food diaries and
right.
Things are a drag. You know, there are a lot of iPhone apps that are coming out all around tracking, but when there's no reason to track other than your own self-motivation, it wears off pretty quickly, and we don't, you know, track. So when you're in a program where your peers are encouraging you to track and they can see what you're tracking and they can see when you're not tracking and you have a goal in mind and maybe you're competing, you're much more likely to continue to track your results because there's a purpose behind it. And so what happens with this platform is you get a tremendous amount of data collected about the performance and outcomes of employees over a long period of time, a wealth of data. We do research with Dr. Rena Wing from the Weight Control and Diabetes Research Center, and she's a very famous weight loss and weight maintenance researcher. She was the lead investigator on the diabetes prevention program study, which was a landmark diabetes study, and as well as the Look Ahead trial. And she once told me, she said, you guys are really spoiled. You give me data sets of, you know, thousands and thousands of people and millions of data points. Most of us have done research on 30 or 40 people at a time. And,
right.
You know, the real insight there is you can get large amounts of people to track their results and tell you what they're doing because they're motivated to do so. So the employer can then look at those results and they can see, you know, how many pounds are my employees losing? Am I shifting the body mass index curve of my population? And what they start to do is extrapolate those results so that if I reduce the average BMI of my employee population by 1 point, and Dr. D'Eddington tells us that, you know, that's equivalent to $200 in cost reductions in just medical and pharmaceutical claims alone. Forget about all the productivity and morale and retention benefits that you're seeing. So employers are really looking at that data that's being collected on physical activity, on weight loss. They're also doing, you know, pre- and post-surveys so they can ask employees, are you healthier? Are you more physically active? They're asking questions about morale. Do you look forward to coming to work more? Are you working better with your colleagues? Do you credit your employer for doing this? Yeah, do you feel better about your employer? So there's a wealth of data that's able to be collected through this type of intervention through an online platform that's engaging people and giving them a reason to respond and submit their results. And then what we're seeing with some clients is they're doing claims analysis. So they're saying year over year, let's compare the people who are in Shape Up versus the people who are not in Shape Up.
Right. Almost like a control group, if you will, right? You know, the folks who really participated actively in the socially driven wellness sort of initiatives versus the ones who didn't. That's got to be pretty compelling data for an organization to really take back and sort of maybe look to expand these programs as well.
It is. You know, it's not randomized, so it's not that gold standard. You know, it's a self-selected group of people that are motivated to sign up. But what we can show is often that the population that's participating exactly mirrors the population of the company. So we don't see that there's more people who are healthy weight participating. We're seeing actually that it's a pretty broad cross-section of the population. The same percentage of people that are healthy weight, overweight, obese are the same percentage in our program. And so when you see the outcomes there, you can start to compare with the rest of the population. We did a claims analysis with one of our clients that's a Fortune 20 company over the course of 2 years, and they found that the people who did our program had less spending on things like diabetes, Crohn's disease, depression, hypertension. Their overall healthcare costs decreased while all the other employees at the company saw increases in their health claims. And that what I thought was really interesting is their preventive screening rates went up, so that people were taking more control of their health and they were more activated to do the things they needed to do. And even though prevention in the short term sometimes raises costs because people are going to their physician and they're getting their flu shot and they're doing their biometric screening, they actually still saw reduced costs for that population. So that the really advanced employers are starting to get third parties involved like MedStat or Ingenix and doing that type of claims analysis so they can actually look at the ROI of their wellness program.
Yeah, and so, and Rajiv, you mentioned that preventative aspect to it and how that might, in the very short term, sort of raise the number, move the needle a little bit on cost. But one of the things I wanted to sort of get into, if we had time, we have just a couple of minutes left. And again, with Fran Melmed and Rajiv Kumar from Shape Up, we're talking about wellness, social wellness programs. I wanted to talk a little bit about, maybe a bit speculatively with both Fran and you, Rajiv, about sort of the future of sort of wellness, social context or not, but as demographic changes are impacting the workplace, perhaps as governmental and regulation, healthcare reform in the U.S. impacts the workplace, what do you sense might be happening, in organizations? And, it's sort of speculative in the next, 5, 7, 10 years in terms of wellness and these kind of social programs. Rajiv, do you worry that, healthcare reform is going to really impact how organizations look at wellness? Will organizations like that controversial McKinsey study suggest many organizations will simply want to get out of this and leave it all to the government? Do you get the sense that that might be happening?
Yeah, so I guess a couple thoughts here. One is healthcare reform has already had a tremendous impact on the space. I think simply from an increased focus on wellness and prevention. So, if you remember President Obama out there talking about Safeway and talking about some of the companies that are really progressive and have shown leadership in promoting workplace wellness and building a healthy company culture and holding their employees accountable to leading healthy lifestyles, that's gotten a lot of other companies to pay attention, and people are following the leader, so to speak. And we see a huge groundswell in a number of organizations that are really trying to push to do more wellness, to look at value-based benefits design where they, raise rates and then give people money back for doing the things that they know they should be doing to improve their health. So we're seeing just a huge boom in the wellness space and in interest from employers in running this type of program. Certainly the general acceptance and explosion of social networking has made our program a lot more palatable for a lot of employers who maybe otherwise would have shied away from doing something innovative like this.
Sure.
They no longer see it as risky because they themselves are using the social networking platforms that we all use at home, and they realize that, it's not so scary and it actually has a lot of benefits. In terms of shifting who the payer is, I think, I was at AHIP last week, and there was a lot of debate over the McKinsey study and whether that was accurate. Certainly none of our employer clients, who are mostly large self-insured companies with greater than 5,000 employees, have expressed to us that they're planning to abandon healthcare altogether for their employees. I think maybe some smaller companies are going to let their employees go to the exchanges and choose their own insurance. But I don't think we're going to see a massive wholesale abandonment of the employer, based healthcare system in this country. If we do, however, what's nice about a wellness program is that it doesn't matter who the payer is, they have an incentive to improve the health of their population. So whether the payer is the government or the health plan or the employer, they need to focus on prevention and wellness. That's ultimately, the way they're going to save money. An ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure has never been more true than today. As we see, it's going to take us some time to figure out exactly who the payer is going to be. And we're seeing shifts. The insurance companies are certainly expecting more people to be purchasing insurance directly through them. And a big theme at the AHIP conference last week was about member engagement and about how to, become more consumer-centric and how to use wellness to help change behavior and reduce costs for the fully insured population. So there are some shifts. I don't think anybody can really predict what the future will be, but I don't think we're going to see a massive change anytime in the near future. And certainly employers are going to continue to invest in wellness programs.
Fran, your thoughts?
Any kind of speculative,
crystal ball kind of thoughts on this from you?
I'm sorry, were you directing that to me?
Yes, I am.
Okay, sorry. I think we were talking over each other, so I didn't hear you. I just wanted to add, I agree with everything that Rajiv said in terms of that, despite McKinsey's, now somewhat questioned or very questioned survey because of how they went about it.
Right, and for people who don't know what we're talking about, it basically essentially said up to 30% of employers.
It is projected, which was very different than what most survey results have shown. And it since has come out that They didn't release their methodology for a while, and then they did release their methodology, but they talked about that they had educated people beforehand about choices at 2014, which is when people can go on health exchanges and so forth. And so it's all very it wouldn't follow best practice in terms of research. And so it's open to interpretation whether that's accurate. It doesn't reflect what other people have found. But putting even that aside, let's say that you know people do suddenly decide because they can't afford health care to let people join exchanges. You know, one of the things that also would still remain would be the productivity concerns, the engagement concerns, the things that are classic work or HR issues. And the of the top 10 health conditions that drove costs for employers, when you consider medical RX absenteeism and presenteeism, which means you're there but you're not really there, is depression.
Right, sure.
Right, depression is the first. And then it follows out with obesity, arthritis, back, neck pain, and so forth. A lot of these things are still going to be present. They're going to be relevant. So I'd like to believe that it will still be an issue for employers, for the smart employers. If you think back to what Rajiv said initially when he was talking about wellness, and he said that there are laggers, and there were the more progressive employers who got on board early. I would like to think that we would see that still, in that those who are progressive and understand the mind-body connection would continue to have an interest in well-being, and that would extend beyond physical well-being to also mental and emotional well-being.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, it's interesting. I'll say this, even as a physician, I believe that the true value of wellness programs comes from the productivity and the morale and the mental well-being, far greater than from the healthcare costs. You know, the research shows you can reduce someone's healthcare cost by a few hundred dollars per year, but if you make your employees more productive and they look forward to coming to work and you retain them and they're actually getting more work done while they're there, that's 10 times more valuable than any cost savings you can achieve by reducing somebody's cholesterol.
Oh, yes.
One of my favorite conversations recently with a plant manager was about how they found that working around their wellness program not only led to greater productivity, but in a time when there were downsizings, offshoring, you know, every kind of HR disaster going on that affects people's engagement and morale, the wellness program was the thing that connected people, gave them something to work together around, lifted them up in a way that, I mean, he couldn't believe it. It was just phenomenal to hear him talk about that because he was so surprised. He hadn't gone into well-being in the wellness program expecting that. He had gone into it because it connected to their business bottom line.
Yeah.
But he found a pleasant surprise.
Those are super points. It's not just counting up the number of prescriptions we had to fill this year or this quarter, right? There's a lot more to it than that, and a lot more value to it than just, you know, the dollars and cents necessarily in claims costs. That's a super point. Rajiv and Fran, I can't believe it. We're just about at the end of our time. We just got a couple of minutes left. Rajiv, I'll throw it to you. Where can people go, you know, the best place to learn more about Shape Up, learn more about what you guys are doing there, and perhaps get their organizations involved in programs like this? What would you recommend for folks listening tonight to do?
Yeah, so if they're interested in learning about Shape Up, we just launched a brand new website. I think maybe we mentioned this earlier. Our company used to be called Shape Up the Nation. As of earlier this week, we shortened our name to make it a little bit easier for people to find. So we're now just Shape Up, and our website's at shapeup.com. And we've got a lot of resources on the website that help people to learn about what do we mean about it by a social approach to wellness, and what are the mechanics that are at play, and what's the research behind this model, not just from our program, but from lots of leading researchers and leading minds about how a social approach to health can help to transform behavior and reduce healthcare costs. So shapeup.com is the place to go to learn more. And I guess, you know, the parting word I would have for anybody thinking about their employee wellness program is, think about how you can crowdsource it. You know, with this concept of employee-driven wellness is so powerful, yet so few companies have adopted it. But think about bringing your employees together and how you can connect them around shared interests and how they can support each other. Your greatest asset is your existing social network at your company, and it's the greatest untapped asset that you have. And so if you're willing to let go of control and let your employees be in the driver's seat a little bit, they have so much knowledge and so much capacity to share and motivate each other and hold each other accountable and to transform the health of your population. And you'll never see that power unless you actually unleash it and give your employees a little bit of control and take a little bit of a risk. So leverage a bottom-up approach, and you're going to see amazing results for your population.
Rajiv, thanks for that. And I think you think the unleashing that social network probably would have benefits for many organizations well beyond, right, wellness and health. There are probably lots of other areas where that those thoughts would apply. So I really appreciate that. Appreciate you sharing that with us tonight, and appreciate you coming on the show tonight, Rajiv, as well. It was really a pleasure to have you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, and I really enjoyed the conversation.
Great. Rajiv, thank you. Fran, last words from you. We just have about 30 seconds left. Fran Miller, where can you learn more about Fran?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at SEMelmed, and through that you would find my blog and my website. And, no, I think that he's tied it up really nicely, so what more could I add?
Great. Well, Fran, thank you so much for being with us tonight. My pleasure. So great to have you as well. And I guess that's it. This is Steve. We're out for tonight. Thanks to Acquire, our sponsor, acquire.com, AQUIRE.com. We'll see you at SHRM next week. And that's it. And good night from the HR Happy Hour. We'll see you next week. Thank you, everybody. Good night.
Thanks
this
so
episode
much.
Of HR Happy Hour was sponsored by Acquire. Getting waterboarded. Sitting in rush hour traffic in Los Angeles. After drinking 3 cups of coffee. Watching Jersey Shore, watching Pauly Shore, wearing a Lady Gaga meat dress, paper cuts. Again, if these sound more appealing than workforce analytics, you clearly have not experienced the award-winning Acquire Insight. Request a demo today at acquireinc.com/entrepreneur.